Hello, and welcome to Off the Cuff. I am your host, Chris Martinson, and on this program, every week, we are going to bring you a fascinating guest, where we are going to discuss the economy, energy, or the environment, informally and without a script. Welcome, Mish, to Off the Cuff. Oh my God, do we have things to talk about today? You know, the futures in the U.S. markets, what do we have? The S&P was down 3 or 4%, something horrible, 4, maybe 5%. And all of a sudden, the Federal Reserve comes out and starts jawboning like crazy. You got Bullard out there saying, oh, no, maybe QE4. And they start talking it up. And we get this massive increase in the U.S. stock market. But still, QE4 ended yesterday. You knew the central banks had to do something. You knew that the U.S. had done everything it could. It was ending QE. It had jawboned everything up. Europe had already said that they were only going to be doing a much more limited program of asset-backed security purchases. The baton hadn't really been handed off. And then what happened today?
The baton was passed off to Japan. Unexpected announcement today. I get up. I see the future soaring. Of course, the dollar is soaring. The gold is down. But the real news here is the Nikkei up lock limit. Roughly 1,200 points, 1,160 points or so in regular session, and it's up again now after hours, right? A little bit?
Yeah. Just roaring. And the yen is being crushed by this. So Japan came out of the gates and said that they were unhappy, I guess, with all the massive inflation they've already created for their people. They were unhappy with rising import prices that were crushing their savers and retirees. Actually, that wasn't true. What they were unhappy with was the fact that their banks and their financial elite needed more fuel because those people just always seem to need more. And what is it? What is central banks? Who did the central banks really serve? Not the poor people, not the retirees, not the middle income people. Those are just collateral damage. They'll throw them under the bus if they have to. And that's what they just did today. Japan did exactly what the Federal Reserve is doing. And they're saying, you know what? We're going to do something that we know is going to crush the yen, but it's okay. It's going to goose the stock market. So if you happen to be a stock market owner, you're in good shape. But if you're not, if you're one of these people who lives on your retirement account, you just see that your import prices are about to go up again big time because the yen lost 2.6% today. Now, 2.6% doesn't sound like a lot. This is one of the world's largest currencies. This is one of the largest, most liquid currencies in the world, losing 2.6% just like that. Sorry for your losses, all you fixed and lower income people in Japan.
But one of my two favorite trades did well today, Chris, and the other one got hammered.
All right.
My two favorite trades, long the Nikkei and short the yen as a paired trade, and my other favorite trade is, as you know, gold. And gold was down, what, $34-35 today. And, you know, I was wondering yesterday, and the miners, you can just, like, see that last rise in gold, the miners didn't fall, and I'm just sitting here thinking, Chris, it looks like another shoe's ready to fall. I didn't know what the shoe was, but apparently someone knew, and Japan Central Bank announced they were going to buy some more equities last week. That probably should have been the clue that they're getting ready to do something. And the surprising news today, you know, on top, well, all of this is idiotic, and you and I agree on that. But Japan, the statement today was that Japan was concerned that falling energy prices would hurt their inflation target. So here, as worldwide demand for energy is sinking, I mean, there's no other way to look at it, right? I don't believe there's any other way to look at it. You know, that's what's behind the drop in crude, a slowdown in China, a slowdown in Europe, and we can debate whether there's one here in the United States or not, but certainly there's a slowdown in the rest of the world. That's hurt energy prices. So the one thing that was hurting Japan the most was energy imports with the sinking yen, and the concern last week was alleged concern, like you said, was over rising energy prices. And today they came out and said, you know what, we lied. Well, they didn't say we lied, but they said they're worried that falling energy prices are going to hurt their inflation target of 2%. Amazing. Absolutely.
Yeah. And of course, energy prices and inflation, they're trying to measure one thing by getting another. And it's just not, it's not correct. So energy prices can go up and can go down. It has nothing to do with the inflation they actually need. So when a central bank says they need inflation, what they're really saying is, look, we've got way too much debt over here on the government books for this to be paid off in anything like what we'd all call rational terms, right? So the government can either default on it, right? Or try and pay it down. Or if you're a government, you can try and print your way out from under that. Printing means you're going to go for financial repression, which means you want your savers to have to accept negative real interest rates, right? How do you get negative real interest rates? Well, you give somebody, make this simple, 0% on their savings, and then you make inflation something higher than zero, you get a negative real interest rate. And that takes money from everybody who's a saver. Transfers it somewhere, though. This is the mystery part of this mechanism. It doesn't just disappear. When I lose half my purchasing power in 20 years through low-level inflation, where did my half of my purchasing power go exactly? Well, it got transferred. It didn't just disappear. That's what the banks are just want you to go, oh, it just did. We went somewhere. Who could know? It gets transferred. So to the people of Japan, your central bank has just said, we are going to transfer your wealth, and we're transferring it to the holders and the issuers of the monstrous mountains of debt that we've got out here. That's our financial industry, and that's your government. And we're going to take your money and purchasing power, and we're transferring it to these people, and that's the game they want. So when they say, oh, you know, inflation's a little low and we're worried about falling oil prices creating low inflation, what they're saying is we're worried we're not going to be able to take your money from you as fast as we'd like. That's what they're saying.
That's exactly right. And Japan committed today, I don't know if you saw this final piece of the puzzle here, to buying more long-term Japanese treasuries.
Yeah.
Long-term.
Well, who else was going to do it?
Exactly. There is no one else to do it. Because of aging demographics, the pension funds in Japan are actually net sellers now.
Yeah.
And have been. It's not a huge amount yet, but it's going to be pretty soon. And these pension plans are net sellers. They're the ones that have been buying all of these Japanese treasuries. So, Chris, who's left to buy? The bank of last resort, right? So
No. Let me correct that. They are now the bank of only resort.
Yes. So, that's what it is.
The bank of only resort. So here's the thing. We're supposed to believe two separate narratives here from the central banks. One, hey, look at all this recovery we're getting. We got jobs are up and the Chicago PMI is really high, and which means the purchasing managers index is up. So we've got all sorts of indications here. You know, unemployment is dropping. Hey, we want you to believe in this story that everything's okay. But also we want you to believe that it makes total sense for us every time there's even slight weakness in the market for us to talk more, dump more money in, otherwise behave as if we're absolutely terrified of anything that might look like reality creeping into our financial markets. You can't put both of those pieces together without experiencing cognitive dissonance. One of these two things is not like the other. One of them can't be true at the same time, right? So I look at what Japan's central bank is doing, and I know the central banks have been burning up the bat phones, talking to each other, saying, how are we going to pass this baton? United States has an election coming up, so you know, we definitely don't want QEs ending right near an election to throw any doubt into anything. That's our motivation. Japan desperately needs to create something other than the circumstances it finds itself in. Europe's got the same situation. All of this, and we're supposed to hold a third thing that I don't understand. How, Mish, in what world do central banks open up the floodgates like Japan just did, and somehow the message is, I got to sell all the gold I can get my hands on. I've just got to dump gold.
It's a knee-jerk reaction, probably to the rising dollar. But yeah, that's the other piece of the cognitive dissonance that doesn't make a lot of sense in this trade. If anything, a rational approach from gold would have been, my God, look at how screwed up the world economy is, that we need to do this. You know, what's going to happen when Europe does this now? And more importantly, what happens to U.S. earnings and U.S. growth and something like 40% of U.S. earnings are foreign. I think I've got that number right. Maybe you've got a better one. And so the rising dollar is going to hurt those earnings. And I talked about this yesterday on my blog. already we are seeing earnings expectations ratcheting down. That's the other another piece of cognitive dissonance, actually, with all these earnings ratcheting down, and the stock market goes up. So a whole number of factors here, Chris,
But these markets aren't trading off fundamentals anymore, because the fundamental are, so you want to say, okay, fundamentally gold is down because the dollar is up. In many cases, it trades like the anti-dollar, fine. But that's true for the stock market as well, for the reason you mentioned, which is that so much of the S&P 500 earnings are foreign derived. You can't hedge all of those earnings off, which means that whenever the dollar goes up, your foreign earnings go down. It's just a seesaw, right? So from a fundamental standpoint, if they said, okay, the dollar's really going higher here and it could really vault higher and gold's going to get slammed, that's a fundamental argument, fine. But on that same fundamental basis, the U.S. stock market ought to be going down, and it's not. So everything that the central banks seem to need in order to create the appearance of rising wealth, of financial stability, and that gold is not an attractive place to keep your money, all of those things seem to be just coincidentally working out for them. Here's the weird part in this story, though, is the price of oil. You know, Mitch, for a while I thought that the price of oil potentially could be going down because the U.S. with Saudi Arabia was using oil as a weapon to make a real statement against both Iran and most particularly Russia. So, all right, if we say that's not the explanation, we don't go down that angle, it's not a geopolitical thing. And by the way, the United States has used the price of oil geopolitically as a weapon often in the past, so it's not unthinkable to think it's happening again. But if it's not, what is oil telling us? Oil is telling us that the economy is weak. It dovetails with the earnings stuff you just mentioned. It dovetails with the growth figures that we see out of so many economies, China slowing, Japan in recession, Europe largely in recession, depending on where you look on balance, right around zero. United States growth is weak. Oil going down. All of that fundamentally says, hey, maybe we've got weakness going on here in the global economy. I'm looking at oil here with the S&P hitting all-time highs here, up 17 points at the moment, and oil is down another 1.5% in the U.S. market, and it's under $80 a barrel. Again, cognitive dissonance, or can you fundamentally, Mish, line all this up and make sense of it for us?
Oh, so let me see here. So oil's going down, and Japan is concerned about oil going down. So they come out with a statement, and it gooses the stock market, and oil falls more. So what's the reaction of the Bank of Japan going to be to that? Hey, it didn't work, so let's do more of it. Of course, that's what they all do, right, Chris?
They do. And Mish, I'll tell you, for anybody listening to this who happens to be in Japan or live in Japan or somehow holds savings in Japan, get out. Don't do that. Do not hold your money in the yen. Your government has been telling you for 3 years straight that they are out to destroy the yen. Today was a big movement of destruction for the yen. And I think they're going to succeed beyond their wildest dreams at some point. Mish, I can't predict exactly when, but when it happens, what we're going to see is the yen really start to fall and fall hard. And then what's going to happen? Well, either they really let it just go completely into a catastrophe zone or they have to defend it. What's the only way that you can really defend, you know, unless you can call up and have your other central bank buddies help you out under the table? The only way that we know for a central bank to defend a currency is to raise its interest rates. What's the one thing that is like, if you have an Achilles heel, what happens when you have six Achilles heels? For Japan, that's rising interest rates. They can't. So if Japan gets itself into a situation where they succeed in destroying their currency to a point they have to defend it, they've gotten themselves to the place where they can't defend it, using what every other country in the world has always had to use, which is to raise their interest rates, because they couldn't afford it. The interest cost, they can't raise rates here without creating an even bigger disaster than the one they've got. And they're doing all of this, Mish, simply because they can't square up to this idea that Japan's economy is not growing and it doesn't need to grow and it shouldn't grow, because they're actually losing population on a yearly basis. And the population they do have is also aging every day. So those two things say, we have a lower consumption-based economy, and it's going to actually get smaller, but the banks can't do smaller. That's the tension that's ratcheting up, and so Japan has just said, to heck with it. We're just going to pile up as much debt per capita as we possibly can until this thing breaks. If you have money in Japan, do not hold it in currency. Don't think of money as wealth. Get that whatever cash you've got, and make sure you're holding real wealth. And if you have to hold cash, personally, I would hold it in any other currency I could get my hands on.
Exactly. And I had an interesting call yesterday, actually, you know, out of the blue. Someone from Newsweek called me up, and she wanted to talk about income inequality and the causes of it. And I kindly pointed her in the same direction that you would have. Central banks are the main, you know, look, who's the stock market rally benefiting? It's going to benefit the CEOs by stock options. It's going to benefit, we've talked about this before, people with first access to money. That's what QE was all about. It benefited those that held assets. Well, who holds assets? It's not the common guy on the street that's benefiting from this stock market rally at all. It's the central bankers. It's government via taxation. It's rising home prices. There's more property taxes, more sales taxes when inflation is up. The average guy on the street is getting killed. And I'm explaining this to this woman, and she goes, wow. And I tell her more, and she goes, wow. And I think she said, wow, about four times. And then finally, she said, you know, this conversation is a lot different than the one I had with the four other people that I called. and I said, yeah, I don't doubt that. But, you know, at a couple points, she started challenging me on what I was saying. And the conversation was supposed to last just 5 minutes, went on for probably like 40, and I don't know what's going to come out of it. There's no guarantee that there's going to be a mention of my name or she's going to use anything she said, but I'm going to be watching. And of course, they always tell you that, well, if we use your article, we'll send you a copy, but they never do. So, but anyway, I'm going to be looking for this in Newsweek, see if they quoted me at all and how much and what the other people said. But here we are, and I was explaining just exactly what's going on here, you know, right now, and people are bitching left and right about income inequality, and we've got to do something about it. Well, they're making it worse, aren't they, Chris?
Well, this is the thing. I had this article came out in MarketWatch. It actually got really wide coverage last week, which was on this subject, and I talked about how the Federal Reserve is throwing granny under the bus, right? And this, the mechanism most people don't understand, when the Fed prints money, it prints real purchasing power, but you can't actually print real purchasing power out of nothing, because real purchasing power requires real people to do real things. So when the Fed creates money and it gives that to the government, or uses it to buy mortgage-backed securities, and the company that receives the cash from that goes and buys something else, that's real cash. Yeah, I get that. But the mystery part is that people don't understand this next part of it, which is that you can't print real purchasing power out of thin air. All you can do is, when they do that, is take it from somewhere else. So the question is, where is it coming from? Well, it couldn't be more obvious, right? Look at what's happening to the middle class. It's being destroyed, right? You look at real wages over time. That's even using the falsified CPI to hold it down. Real wages are negative. Even using the CPI, steeply negative if you use some other number. Poor people, we look at rising food stamp usage, all of that. All of the people who are working as hard as they can at the middle and lower middle class levels, all their wealth is being siphoned off and stolen. And you don't have to be a genius to figure out, well, where did it go? Because this is a transitive rule in economics, right? It's like we can just say this is an accounting identity. If wealth is being given to one group of people, the only question is where to come from. So we need to know where to come from, where to go. Well, where it came from is from the lower classes and the savers and all that. And where did it go? Just look at the growing wealth gap numbers. But I'm surprised, these people like this journalist, they get confused. They're like, how is it that the wealthy are getting so much more wealthy? Where it's not hard, because you know what we have, Mish? We have the worst financial education, the worst economic education in this country. They never, ever, and I know why, tell us the real story about how the system works. They keep it completely hidden. But the good news is we have this thing called the internet today, and there are these things called books. And if people want to, they can financially educate themselves. It's not hard. Figure out what the game is. But boy, once you look at that game, if it doesn't make you mad, I don't think you're really paying attention. If I'm in Japan, I'm mad. In fact, I'm mad for the people of Japan, and I'm also mad because of what my central bank is doing to me and my country. And I'm mad for how these bankers are doing this to the whole world, because they are just fundamentally acting as if they know better than anybody else who should have the wealth and who shouldn't have the wealth. because that's what they do when they do what they do, right? They take wealth from one place, give it to another place. They said, you guys shouldn't have it, you guys should. And I don't think they're smart enough, and I don't trust them.
Oh, they're not smart enough. I don't trust them. I told this woman on the Newsweek, or actually she said to me, you mean we shouldn't have a central bank? Well, you know, how can we deal without it? And I said, you know, look at the rising bubbles that we've had over time. Just in the last, 14 years, we had a bubble boom and bust in 2007. In 2000, we had another one in 2007, 2008, 2009. And here we are, 7 years later. I said, the only reason why people don't see this bubble here right now is because it hasn't bust yet. And I said, I guarantee you it will. I also said, I can't put a time frame on it. We've tried to do this before. I've tried to put a time frame on this before. And because, you know, every time, and we've talked about this, every time it looks like it's going down, they step in and manage to blow an even bigger bubble out of it. And we're seeing it today, you know, right now, S&P close to a new high or hit a new high today. The, you know, absolutely, amazing here. And they want to keep this going. They don't even see the bubble. They didn't see the housing bubble even in the late stages in 2007. Bernanke didn't see it. They didn't see the dot-com bubble in 2000. In fact, Greenspan warned in, 1996 of irrational exuberance. Well, by the time 2000 came around, he became a big believer. He called it the productivity miracle and thought it was going to keep going on. You know, so he became a believer in his own bullshit. That's what happened. It's happening again here right now. Meanwhile, Yellen's, you know, screaming about income inequality. And these guys don't even realize they are the primary central force behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I see the coordinated actions of the central banks right now, this is just where, Mish, we're getting to what we'll call the end stage of this particular story. And by the way, there could be more steps. And I've always been looking for a final blow off top that really tells you that, you know, we're just about to shift this story into its next phase, which for me is financial crisis and an accident, which in the big picture is simply this. You know, we've since 2008, the developed world has gone from about $69 trillion to over $100 trillion of debt, right? We've poured on another $30 trillion of debt. That's great. How much world economy did we, in the developed worlds, did we pour on? About a tenth that much. So we're creating debt now at roughly 10 units for every one unit of new economic activity. And the central banks are acting as if they're unaware of the fact that it used to be 1.5 units of debt to get a new unit of GDP, that we're down to somewhere in the vicinity of 10, and that this trend has been going on for 30 years, and it's headed in the wrong direction. And they're acting as if it won't be a problem if that number goes from 10 to 1 to 21 to 100 to 1 to a million to 1. They don't care because the central banks need more debt in the system. They don't need it because it's good for you. They don't need it because it's good for the environment. They don't need it because it's good for anything except for the system of money that they're in charge of overseeing. That's fine. Let them play their little games like that. But what they're doing really is running one of the largest experiments on humans that's ever been conducted. I hope somebody's videotaping this and they can take notes and compare and study this, because this is just an experiment. And to me, it seems completely obvious that the trajectory of saying we're going to go from 1.5 units of debt to 10 units of debt is terrifying, because I ascribe to various pieces of economic thinking, but the piece I've always loved from the Austrian school from von Mises is around the idea that you either voluntarily abandon a credit cycle or you face the destruction of the currency, or in this case, currencies involved. What worries me is that Japan, Europe, and the United States are acting as a unified central bank and doing whatever it takes to make sure they can keep the credit expansion going. And they've never once publicly stepped back and said, was it a good idea to be growing credit faster than the underlying economy? Maybe not. And by the way, where are the resources going to come from to create this new, bigger world? they're not doing that. So I look at what Japan did today and I say, oh my God, they are just locked into a paradigm so deeply that they don't know how to do anything else but more of that paradigm. And honestly, by now, I think it's time for a little introspection, and they seem to be unable to do that.
Absolutely. with that, Chris, I think this is one of our best podcasts ever here. And it's actually fortuitous. Normally we're on Wednesday, and here we are on Friday by accident, and stunning news to talk about today. And wow, what news it was. And I think the final note here is, if you're in the end, get the hell out of it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time today, Mish.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on.